produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Last Saturday, I had the chance to attend a day of the Students for Sensible Drug Policy International Conference at the Georgetown Law Center in Washington, D.C. There were over 350 students in attendance, and last Saturday saw the keynote panel with three noted American journalists. Moderating the panel was Slate.com's Ryan Grimm, who we've interviewed here on the Audio Stash. He's one of the only journalists in this country taking a hard look at the issues of prohibition and drug policy on a regular basis. Grimm's articles have appeared in numerous print locations and are referenced frequently in the media. Also on the panel was well-known television commentator, newspaper columnist, and radio talk show host Bill Press. Press has been a staple of progressive American political commentary for over 15 years and continues with a daily three-hour call-in talk show. Also on the panel was journalist and commentator Clarence Page. Mr. Page's column appears in the Chicago Tribune, and he's often seen on the McLaughlin Group and other political commentary programs. Page is a longtime supporter of Normal, who spoke at the Normal Conference the last time it was held in Washington, D.C. The Audio Stash got a chance to chat with Page just before the panel began.
We're here at the Students for Sensible Drug Policy Conference with Clarence Page. Clarence, welcome to Normal's podcast.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
Great to speak with you today. What's your interest here in Students for Sensible Drug Policy?
Well, I was very happy that they invited me. I've been writing about drug issues for years, along with other political issues. And so I'm very happy to be here. I've been over, I did a Normal panel here a couple of years ago. I've been at a marijuana policy, you name it. People think marijuana and they think, Clarence Page,
And do you think, what are your views as far as where marijuana in America can sort of progress right now? And where can we go right at this moment, sort of regular everyday citizens and not necessarily the activists we see here today?
It's a real funny issue in that regard, my baby boomer generation kind of got the ball rolling, and suddenly in the 70s, it went from being strictly forbidden and a felony to possess marijuana to where it was almost anything goes, to a point where I think Americans think that there's a lot less drug prosecution for marijuana than there actually is. And in fact, I've had two drugs. I've talked to all three of the drug czars we've had so far, and I know two of them sat right there in front of me saying, oh, nobody gets arrested for possession of marijuana anymore. I said, how can you say this to me now? There's a lot of misinformation. I think people think it's much less of an issue than it actually is. So when people bring it up, they think, oh, that again, because they got other priorities, the war in Iraq or something else, and I think gets buried.
And do you think that Speaker Pelosi being from San Francisco, California, future House Speaker Pelosi being from San Francisco, California, and the changing Congress, that this might have a change in atmosphere for marijuana in America?
Sadly, I'm not optimistic on that score. In fact, if there was any time to have some change, it was back when Bill Clinton was in power with a Democratic Congress. Remember, absolutely no movement in the right direction occurred. In fact, quite the opposite. His drug czar was one of those who sat there, Barry McCaffrey, sat there and told me, oh, nobody gets arrested for marijuana anymore. anymore. You know, I mean, Democrats are paranoid about appearing too liberal, about appearing to be the so-called San Francisco Democrat that Nancy Pelosi gets pasted with. I mean, she's never been that type, if you will. She's been, you know, she's the child of a Baltimore mayor. She's an old school machine, Paul. We saw her try to do that with endorsing a majority leader, a candidate who failed to get elected. I mean, she's always been an inside player. I mean, a wonderful person. I have nothing against her. But as far as marijuana policy goes, it's really, to me, it seems like it's really kind of frozen in the political world right now. And in the media, editors tend to think it sounds like old news, and so they don't assign stories like they used to. Pundits like me are not so inclined to write about it because there's so many other issues to write about. So the issue kind of gets buried.
Clarence, I don't want to keep you from your panel. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Let's do it again, and good luck to you.
Next up today, we'll hear audio from that panel last weekend at the SSDP conference. First, we'll hear Ryan Grimm, then Clarence Page, then Bill Press, as they discuss prohibition and the media.
Because there has been such a vacuum of drug policy coverage in the media, it opened a way for me to move up quickly in the drug policy world. I mean, in the media, even in the mainstream media. And I tell it because I feel I get a sense from a lot of reporters that they have a fear of doing serious reporting about drugs and drug policy because they're afraid that they won't be taken seriously. And perhaps I'm an anomaly and they're right. Or maybe they're wrong. And so I wanted to ask the panels here who actually have had careers in journalism, as opposed to me who's just, you know, looking at one possibly in the future, if, you know, if that is the case, and also when you first started doing reporting about drugs, how did your colleagues react to that? Were you looked at as less of a serious journalist? Obviously, anything that came from that has been overcome, but what was it like when you originally started that?
Well, thank you, first of all, for inviting me today. I'm delighted to be here to talk about this topic and get into it. I have to say right off the bat that when we talk about seriousness with the drug issue, I agree that seriousness is important. At the same time, probably the worst sin journalists can commit outside of being inaccurate, which, of course, is the number one sin, would be the sin of being dull. So I'm here to defend headlines that use cliches like up in smoke and that risk issue burns me up, et cetera, et cetera, if only because a little levity doesn't do anybody any harm. And here I go. Coffee, tea, or here we go. Thank you. And secondly, I love the goodie bag you all gave me, but it's hard for me to keep a totally straight face when I open the goodie bag and I see a bottle of hemp shampoo, and then this wonderful chocolate here in case I get the munchies. Let's remember the true nature of our topic here. Number two, regard to the press. Please rest assured there is no normal way to become a journalist. That's the beauty of journalism. That's the beauty of our First Amendment in this country and the free press and other rights that it guarantees, including the right to print all the blotters you want to as long as you don't dip them in acid. And therefore, you can sell them as museum pieces, etc. Today it's even better because of the great explosion of media that we have. Slate.com being an example, the internet, et cetera, has made it possible for you to do things we talked about when Bill Press and I were students back in the 1850s, where there was some talk about, talking back to your TV set and everybody being their own journalist and taking advantage. Well, you can do it now. You know, you got the power. And so I preface my remarks by saying that these days when you talk about what the media covers or doesn't cover, it's all out there. It's a matter of access. You know, either reporters access to information or news consumers having access to the journalism. Now, I want to talk about pathologies of the press. A couple have been mentioned already. One of them is the overuse of cliches and headlines. And another one is what Jack Schaefer talked about, which I've talked about. I've been threatening for years to write a book on pathologies of the press if I ever find the time. But one of the pathologies I noticed early on was the pathology of proximity, that as an old rewrite man, mentor of mine, told me back in the 1870s, so when I was working the rewrite desk at the Chicago Tribune, Sun News is whatever happens near the news editor's house. And with that one remark, he told me something I hadn't heard in 4 years of university journalism instruction, but it is true. On the flip side is what Jack Schaefer demonstrated to you, which is that editors have an abhorrence of anything that sounds too new. It's like it's too good to be true. You know, this, you walk in there and say, hey, where's all the acid gone? And you say, wait a minute. You know, it just sounds too far out. Who is this kid walking in here? You know, now if you were Bob Woodward, maybe he would have been a little more whatever, you know. Maybe he should, maybe he shouldn't, but he would have, you know. It's that kind of thing happens. There's that resistance then to something that is either too new and too unfamiliar, or something that is too familiar at the same time, you know. So there's always kind of a crazy paradox. Number three is that we're a daily business, or at least us in the old media, we're a daily business, that get it out and get the news delivered immediately, and tomorrow is a new day. So whatever either rules, standards, et cetera, you think of for what is news, it's going to change day to day. Now, you in the new media of the internet, it's news every minute. Everything is new constantly. And it's kind of like sausage making. You just kind of cut it off and tie it up and produce some more. So what happens is I honestly don't know why we have such weird behavior in regard to covering drugs, because it always changes. I don't believe editors are against marijuana legalization or fairness in drug policy, because most editors now are of my generation. They're boomers, came up through the 60s. Whether they're open about their past drug use or quiet about it, like President Bush, nevertheless, we have different attitudes toward it than our parents did. It was our generation that kind of broke things open in the 60s as far as attitudes went. And by the 70s, you had so much legalization or decriminalization of marijuana that now there's a false impression. I was just telling this to a normal podcaster here that, there's a false impression widespread in the land that we have a lot less marijuana enforcement and abuse of the law than we actually do have. And I've had two out of three drug czars tell me to my face that nobody gets arrested for marijuana possession anymore. Now these are drug czars. They feel confident. Barry McCaffrey under Clinton, you know, I was asked if I expect a liberalization of policy under Nancy Pelosi, a San Francisco Democrat. And frankly, liberal Democrats are scared to death of appearing to be too liberal on certain issues. And when you get near drugs, they get, it's like there's a scarlet letter about serious debate of the issue. In the media, in our newsroom pathologies, there's a sense a lot of editors have that this is old news, that, well, it's not a story anymore, you know. And that's not true of all drugs. You guys at Slate have done a great job of probing methamphetamine and how methamphetamine has been covered. It's like Reefer Madness all over again, you know, Newsweek and others, where they've covered the meth epidemic versus the reality. At least, you know, Jack Schaefer, you've been able to give some kind of balance to the covers as kind of a preponderance out there in the media. So, like I say, I could go on and on. Let's give Bill Press a chance.
I'll pick up there.
Jump right in there.
Hello, everybody. Good to be with you. This is my first introduction to Students for a Sensible Drug Policy. I'm glad to know you exist. I'm glad to know that the work you're doing. I know you've been around 8 years. SSDP, I was thinking driving over. I look forward to when we have an SSEP organization, Students for a Sensible Environmental Policy. We could also have SSWP, Students for a Sensible War Policy, which I'd like to see. And then how about if we go on to an SSTP, Students for a Sensible Torture Policy, which is like, you know, maybe get rid of it. In terms of, so good to be with you. In terms of reporters and why they're afraid to touch it? I think for a couple of reasons. I think it comes out of ignorance. I don't think they know the issue. I don't think they take time to find out about the issue. They believe the bullshit that they're fed from politicians or the drug czar or, I mean, you know, remember, the war on drugs started in 1971 under Richard Nixon. That ought to tell you something. And we spent billions and billions of dollars since, $20 billion a year now. And what has it gotten us? Nothing. Nothing except a waste of money and filling our prisons and with people who shouldn't be there. But the reporters don't even want to, they don't, to me, the facts are so obvious, but the reporters don't want to go there. And I think one of the reasons they don't want to go there, they not only don't know about it, they don't want to find out about it, is they're afraid if they start reporting on drugs seriously and positively, God forbid, they would hurt their careers. And I also think they're afraid they might reveal something about their own past. And so they just stay away from it. It's like the third rail of the media for many people, like it's the third rail of politicians. How many campaigns this we just got through the midterm elections? You know, why wasn't the war on drugs an issue in any campaign around the country? I don't know where it was an issue in any campaign around the country, except in the two states where there were initiatives on the ballot. And to my great dismay, the one in Nevada lost. I thought if anywhere in a state that legalizes prostitution, gambling, and almost anything else you want, that you could get an initiative passed to decriminalize marijuana, but it didn't work there. But again, the issue wasn't talked about in 2006. It wasn't talked about in 2004. It wasn't talked about in 2000, except when somebody said, oh, Al Gore smoked pot once. Oh, wow. So I just think that the reporters are afraid of it. In terms of my own reporting, the second part of your question, let me make it clear. I've never been a reporter, and I'm not one now. Okay, so I'm a commentator, which means it's the best job in the world. I get to give my opinion and get paid for it. So I'm not expected to report the facts. I'm expected to give my opinion. But I'm expected to know the facts and to research the facts and to base my opinion on the facts. And so when I started doing talk radio and I started writing a column and I started doing political commentary on television, happened to be in Los Angeles, one of the things that I looked at was this war on drugs. And I realized that I'm a conservative, not a liberal, because I don't like wasting money and I don't like government programs that are massive government programs that spend all of our money and waste all of our money and accomplish nothing. And a real conservative... I'm not running for office. I didn't. But I realized those were the facts. Now, how did I get that across to my audience, right? It didn't come because I'm, by the way, all right, I lived in the hate. I was there in the summer of love. So you know my background.
If you remember it, you weren't there.
So they weren't going to take it coming from me, a liberal former pothead from San Francisco, but I found the best guy that I got was a judge, a Republican judge from Orange County. Those of you from California here know Orange County is about as far right as you can get. And I brought this judge onto my radio show in KFI in Los Angeles, and he was terrific. What is his name?
Jim Gray.
Jim Gray. Thank you. Okay. I guess he's still out there and still making sense. And he just said, as a Republican, as a conservative, this makes no sense because of all the money that's being wasted in law enforcement, in court time, in prison time, in the bailiffs. He went right from A to Z in how this was wasting public resources. And he was very, very effective, and certainly more effective than I could have been. So I guess my first little winding up here, my first little bit of advice would be, in terms of spokespeople for the issue, the media is absolutely essential to getting your message out. It's absolutely essential to our changing our national drug policy, to get away from prohibition, to have a sensible drug policy. You've got to use the media. You've got to cultivate the media. And I think one way to do it is to get people out there on the media who represent mainstream America that people are not going to be afraid of.
What about you, Clarence? How did you start reporting on drugs, and what was the impact that had?
As a police reporter. as a police reporter in Chicago, which is a great place to be a reporter of any kind. I mean, the only city that associates the Feast of St. Valentine with a massacre, as a city of, and the politics reflect that. And it is this interesting thought. You know, should we say prohibition-related crime instead of drug-related crime? You know, that's an interesting thought because it does deliver a message. And we're constantly debating in the business politically loaded terminology. Take the abortion issue. There's no way to report on the abortion issue without using language that's loaded. Do you refer to somebody as being pro-choice or pro-abortion, anti-choice or anti-abortion? You know, each side wants you to use certain kinds of language. So I just try to be as factual and close to facts as possible. The question of, you know, are you treated seriously if you cover drug issues? Now that I'm a pundit, I mean, I spent two decades now as a pundit, a columnist, editorial writer, et cetera. I've never had that prejudice. I mean, somebody, oh, he just covers drugs. But when I was a rock critic, I'd get that. Well, he only covers rock and roll, you know. And I personally felt like it was the most important music that was happening at that time. Thank you. I mean, gosh, we gotta, I mean, heaven knows. Don't judge rock by what's on the radio now. That's all I can tell you. Anyway, okay. I speak, by the way, as someone who interviewed Jerry Garcia in 67 as a student when I was your age, kiddies. But anyway, smoking doobies backstage at the Ohio University Memorial Auditorium, I want to tell you. What a way to impress a date, you know. But anyhow, it was, no, I've never, you know, I know what I'm, you know, in fact, I had the most prejudice when I was a religion editor for about a year at the Chicago Tribune back in the 70s. You know, I mean, maybe people say Clarence is a religion editor, you know, but no, covering drugs, I think people are serious. And let's be serious about one thing. I think most Americans are sensible about drug policy. I think most Americans have a very sensible drug policy in their heads. And when we go to the referenda are reflections of the popular will. And, Bill, you're right. It was disappointing to see that full-out legalization didn't pass. But look at the track record, though. Each one has had, it's coming closer and closer to 50% on full legalization we're talking about here, or decriminalization, however you want to use that language, too. But look at medicinal marijuana. Put that on a ballot, almost every case it has passed, except where you've got some kind of a technical glitch of some kind. And then Hawaii, their legislature legalized medicinal marijuana. You know, the public, I think, is sensible about it in terms of seeing very little reason to keep medicinal marijuana or marijuana illegal for medicinal purposes. When it comes to all-out decriminalization, say, of simple possession, then they start to get squeamish, start to get nervous. I'm a parent now with a 17-year-old who I happily brought to a normal panel discussion a few years ago, and he was one of the most mature people in the room. He's great. He's great as long as he's not in our house. He suddenly reverts, or when he's with his no-count friends. But, you know, it's remarkable. And he's a graduate of – he's a veteran of D.A.R.E. In school. So he's been exposed to both sides. And I'm proud of the kid. But also as a parent, I get squeamish about the idea of legalization. And I want to think about it some more and talk about it. Kurt Schmoke, former mayor of Baltimore – and prosecutor, thank you, on behalf of Kurt Schmoke, who has now been featured on the Wire. For those of you who got the disc set, latest set has some great interviews with Kurt Schmoke and others about one of the premises of the last season. They took a section of Baltimore on the show. This is fictitious, but they called it Amsterdam, or on the street, Hamsterdam. The cops just decided to legalize drugs in this one part of town here, and marvelously wonderful things happened to the rest of town until the whole thing got exposed. But they based it on Kurt Schmoke, who advocated legalizing cocaine as an alternative to the kind of awfulness that Baltimore and other cities have had. He just verbalized it, and by verbalizing it, he sunk his chances of being mayor of Baltimore again. That's just how politically, I'm sorry?
He was reelected twice after that speech.
That's not the way Kurt Schmoke describes it on the disc anyway. And maybe it was his Nightline appearance with Charlie Rangel. I don't know. But it was, but it's something that politicians are afraid of this issue to even have a serious discussion about it. So, it's something that I think in that regard, the public is still hashing over this issue. Politicians, I think, are dragging behind the public as far as the public's sense of a sensible drug policy, which makes it even more important for the media to report it.
I just want to pick up on one thing. You mentioned that, Chris, I was reading on your website that the Zogby poll, 46%, was it, of Americans now support? Clarence was mentioning public support. I was just reading this morning that the Zogby poll that Normal reported a Zogby poll. 46%, I think it showed, of Americans today would support decriminalization, which I thought mm-hmm. was astounding. And you're right, way ahead of the politicians. Just two quick thoughts that came to me while Clarence was talking. One, I want you to know that there is hope. Ethan Nadelman in the back row was a frequent guest on Crossfire when I was doing Crossfire with Pat Buchanan and John Sununu and Bob Novak, the Prince of Darkness. And I remember I was always for the decriminalization or legalization, as far as I'm concerned, and they were always against it. So then when we left Crossfire, and then a couple years later, Pat Buchanan and I had a show on MSNBC, Buchanan and Press, and we were always coming up with debate topics for every day. And I remember one day we were trying to think of what I said, I know, let's debate medical marijuana, because I remembered Pat's position on it. I was always for it. He was totally against it. No way, no how. And Pat said, no, we can't debate that. I said, why not? Come on. It's a hot issue. It's out there. It's on the ballot in California. And Pat says, because you and I agree on it. And I said, what? And Pat had gone 180 degrees from being totally against it to totally for it. So if Pat Buchanan can change his mind, I just want you to know, there is hope.
About two decades behind William F. Buckley.
Right, for example, mm-hmm. and George Shultz and some other conservative leaders. You mentioned language, which I think is something else in dealing with the media that's very important. In my book, Spin This, I went back and looked at what Newt Gingrich had done when he took over the Congress in 1994. And Gingrich actually published a list of words that Republicans should use when they talk about Republicans. Loyal, patriotic, moral, upstanding, all of those good words. And then a list of words, and you've heard them all, that they should use when they're talking about Democrats, right? Traitors, sloppy, lazy, whatever, big spenders, all those kinds of words. Words are – so Gingrich, he was right about one thing. I mean, words are important, and you use them enough, and enough people use them enough, and you get them out in the media through the talk shows and everything, that those impressions stick. And so when I heard you say, Chris, when you were introducing us, reform of the drug laws, I think that word reform is a real winner. People see that as reform. It's not into the sledgehammer approach. It's just kind of, shaping things up, getting things in better shape. I think fiscal responsibility is a good word, and you talk about that. And you cannot defend the war on drugs from a fiscal responsible point of view. I was on Hardball yesterday with Chris Matthews, for example, and we were talking about the war in Iraq. And Chris, and I knew I was coming today, and so it popped into my head. And Chris was saying, I was just saying, look, this isn't working. There's nothing to do but just recognize and bring the troops home now. And Chris was saying, I've got a better approach that might sell better, which is, and he said this on Hardball yesterday, let's have a cost-benefit analysis of the war in Iraq. And let's just bring the generals in and bring the defense secretary in and say, okay, you've had 3 years. This is what it cost you. What did we get for that money? And now you want another year? All right. How much is it going to cost for one more year of this stupid war in Iraq? And what are we going to get for it? And you do that with every single program. You should, every government program. Let's do it for the war in Iraq. Well, I say, let's apply it to the war on drugs. Right. And it'd be over instantaneously.
That was Ryan Grimm of Slate.com, Clarence Page of the Chicago Tribune, and Bill Press of the Bill Press Show on a panel discussing prohibition and the media at the Students for Sensible Drug Policy Conference last weekend in Washington, D.C. We have links to download the full talk at normalaudio-.com. And you can find out more about Students for Sensible Drug Policy at ssdp.org. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. Listen to the Audio Stash. Vote for us at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. Everyone have a fun summer weekend out there, and we're back at 4:20 on Monday. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.